Moikka!
Hey!
Welcome to our podcast, Mastering Finland.
I'm Jean and I'm from California.
I'm Petra and I'm from the Czech Republic.
We're here to chat about our life in Finland.
Hello everybody, welcome back to our podcast, and today we have a great guest on. She is a research manager at THL, which is a Finnish Institute for Health and Welfare, and her name is Shadia Rask. Hey, hi Shadia, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for coming. It's really nice to, we've talked to psychologists, we talked to companies owners, we talked to individuals about the mental health, but it would be really good to hear a bit more about it from the researcher's point of view.
Perfect.
So yeah, thank you so much. So could you at first tell us a bit about yourself and how did you get interested in the topic of mental health in connection with migration?
Yes. So my name is Shadia and I work as a research manager at the Finnish Institute of Health and Welfare. I've been working at THL for 10 years now, but I guess you could say that my interest towards the topic of mental health stretches all the way back to high school. So I was really interested in psychology and took all the available courses sort of in my attempt to better understand myself, but also the people around me and the society around me. And after high school, I studied and became an occupational therapist and was very much interested in what occupational therapy has to offer people, people's daily life and mental health. But where I found sort of the crossing point of mental health and migration was then in my master's studies on international health and my PhD in public health.
So let's get to the migration then and the mental health, because that's what we are talking about. So what kind of impact does migration have on one's mental health?
So there are different kinds of theories on migration and health, which all attempt to map out the kind of complex relationship between migration and mental health. So first of all, we can think about like migration as a process, how the circumstances and life experiences in so-called the country of origin affect a person's mental health. Then we can look at what happens during a migration journey itself and how that is favorable or unfavorable for mental health. And finally, it's really important to look at the circumstances in the new home country. And this kind of life course perspective is really important when we're talking about mental health and migration.
Mm-hmm. So are mental health issues in relation to migration represented well in the media? Because we hear a lot about migration. Are these issues addressed? And if so, how?
I think this is a really good and interesting question. And I would say that the story portrayed in the media is a lot of times quite distorted. And I think it's really important to notice how minorities and immigrants are often depicted as representing their whole group somehow, whereas members of the majority population are more often seen as individuals. And the media also plays an important role in the stigmatization and like all the negative beliefs that are associated both with mental health and with migration.
So you think that it should be addressed more, and what should be changed about how it is addressed?
One of the things that I like to talk about and what also I try to promote and work on in my own projects at THL is related to the importance of representation. So I think that's really important when we're talking about the media and how migration and mental health is represented in the media. who are writing the stories, who are asking the questions, who are we asking the questions to? And I think if we would have more diverse representation, then sort of there would be more role models. Also, if people belonging to minorities would not only be represented like through a problematic lens or when we're talking about like problems related to migration, that also would change the narrative. So I think it's important to have more stories, more diverse stories, and also more representation in the media and in among those who are actually writing the stories.
Yeah. So you studied mental health in relation to migration. Have you studied it in relation to specific population groups in Finland?
Yeah, thanks. So in my PhD, I was specifically looking at Russian, Somali, and Kurdish origin populations. And the data was from a so-called MAMU study, Migrant Health and Wellbeing study that we conducted in THL in the years 2010 and 2013. But then after that, we've conducted several population surveys where we've been looking at the population of foreign origin, not only in specific groups, but also as a whole. But actually, it's really important when we are, for example, looking at the issue of mental health, not only to talk about like immigrants as if they were one group, but to really look at the different subpopulations and also all the different factors that affect mental health.
Mm-hmm. So are there any specific population groups that are more prone to have mental health issues based on the studies and data that you've seen?
So on a population level, if we look at research, we do find that, for example, refugees and asylum seekers are particularly vulnerable to poor mental health. And also, for example, undocumented migrants are exposed to very difficult conditions. At the same time, I think it's really important to keep in mind that there are multiple factors that determine mental health outcomes. And we can think about individual, social, and environmental factors, which can all be like either risk factors or protective factors. So, for example, loneliness can be a risk factor for poor mental health. And then on the other side, like social support from friends or family can be a protective factor. And in the same way, for example, unemployment or financial insecurity can be a risk factor, and job satisfaction or financial security can be a protective factor for mental health. And a lot of times, I think it's also important to notice how the relationship between like mental health and, for example, unemployment, the direction can go in both ways. So we know from research that on the one hand, unemployment can cause mental health symptoms. And then there are other studies that have looked at it from the other direction. So mental health issues can also lead to unemployment.
It's quite tricky, isn't it? That when you're unemployed, it's sort of dragging you down and the mental health issues are quite likely to come out. But then at the same time, as you said, the other way around, which is quite tricky. So, but back to you said that the most like risky groups, population groups are refugees or undocumented immigrants. Are there any supports when they arrive to Finland and they might have had very difficult and stressful and traumatic journey or the stay in their own country before they decided to leave? So are there any services that are straight away offered to these people when they arrive to Finland?
Yes. So basically, we have like the basic services, primary health services that are provided to all inhabitants in the municipalities. And then at the same time, we do have like specific services. What is provided and how like easily accessible they are differ somewhat, sort of depending on the municipality and also on the basis and like residence permit. But yes, services should be available, and we also at THL, even at the time being, we have several development projects that are specifically trying to develop mental health services that are provided to refugees and asylum seekers. But I like the way you mentioned that this is really tricky, and it is like in many ways. And I think one of the things that is very tricky and important to notice is how a lot of times even well-intentioned advice that's given to people is just, you know, try and think positively, try and cheer up and look on the bright side of life, and really putting emphasis and responsibility on the shoulders of individuals. And what I think is more important is putting the responsibility and perspective on us as a society and our service system, and really identifying sort of the structural reasons and potential barriers that are causing people to not do well or not be able to be part of the society.
Yeah, I really like how you said that, because that's exactly what I think, that's how it should be. Because the more weight you give on somebody who's already struggling, it's not going to help them. It's just going to drag them down. Definitely that's true and very important. And hopefully by the time, it's going to be more and more possible to get support very easily and quickly. Is there any, like in relation to age, do you have any data on how, if age plays any role in the mental health issues?
That's a good question. I would say that age is an important factor, but not so often like the relationship between age and mental health. It isn't like linear in the sense that mental health symptoms would like increase with age or decrease with age. Definitely like different life circumstances and life situations that can be associated or at different age points are important.
It might be a bit tricky question, but how common are mental health symptoms or problems in different population groups?
Yeah, that's a good question. How common are mental health symptoms? It's fair to say that mental health disorders are all in all very common. For example, it's been estimated that a third of the population in the EU suffers from a mental disorder each year. So that's basically gives us a fair picture of how common and this issue is. But at the same time, it's important to recognize and notice the differences between population groups. So for example, in my PhD study, we found that 50% of Kurdish origin women reported severe mental health symptoms in the past 7 days. And this proportion among Russian origin women was 1 in 4. And then in the general population in Finland, 1 in 10 women. So that also gives a sense of how mental health symptoms can be extremely common in a certain population group, and then in the general population in Finland, among women, it was 1 in 10.
Yeah. So you mentioned women. So did you see any difference between the mental health issues between men and women then?
We did. Mental health symptoms were more common among women than men. And there can be various reasons for that. Quite often, for example, in interview studies, one of the reasons can be sort of how willing one is to disclose mental health problems, and it can be so that women are more willing to disclose, so that can be one reason for sort of the differences between genders, but definitely not the only one.
So when we look at, you know, immigrants and foreigners living in Finland, do you have any data on how equally are the mental health services accessible to immigrants in Finland compared to native Finn?
Yes, that's a really good question. And we do actually have several population studies that have examined this in the past decade or so. Most recently, in this year, 2020, we published a report called the Finmonic study, where we found that persons with a foreign background were more likely to feel that the social and healthcare services that they had received were insufficient compared to the general population. But what was at the same time quite positive was that trust in the Finnish service system was at a rather good level. And in addition to sort of how common social and health services have been used, we've also looked at the different barriers to receiving different services, also mental health services. And these include a range of factors such as long queues and lack of knowledge, but also doubt, price, and specifically also language difficulties.
You mentioned that they reported that the services were inefficient that they received. Was there any like specification why did they think that they were insufficient?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure if we actually in this study had a follow-up question to that, but I know that we sometimes, for example, we've looked at the intensity of care or the times that people have met with a healthcare professional, and that can be like, for example, one of the reasons that the care that's been received isn't as intensive as one would need.
I was just curious if it's sort of, you know, if there was any like relation between the care that they maybe received back in their home countries compared to, so because, you know, you compare usually based on your own experiences with the new thing, so maybe if this was not one of the factors as well.
Yeah, that's really a good question, and also another factor that's related to what you are used to or how you have been taught about mental health. I don't know, maybe in school or in your family. So is the matter of stigma or how like negative perceptions. How much stigma you apply to mental health. So we also know from research that both public but also like self stigma and negative beliefs about mental health problems do like exist as a barrier to seeking help.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, even in Europe, I'm coming from the Czech Republic, and the stigma is still there. It's the most common approach to mental health. I think now the younger people are trying to sort of break it, but it still needs a few years for it yes. to quite disappear, I would say. Maybe even a few generations, to be honest, because it's still quite a heavy thing. And nobody talks about it, even if they, you know, go through something, because this is not what you talk about.
Exactly.
So let's get to discrimination. Firstly, I would ask, is there any correlation between mental health issues and discrimination?
Yes. So this was also one of the questions that I was able to examine in my PhD. And what we found was that there is an association between self-reported experiences of discrimination and physical and mental health. So perceived discrimination increased the odds for these mental health symptoms. And this was also the case for those who reported experiencing so-called like subtle discrimination. So not only like very overt and like in quotation marks, very severe or threatening experiences of discrimination, but also the experiences of not being treated with equal respect or as politely as other people was associated with poorer mental health.
Which were sort of the groups that reported the most discrimination amongst the groups you studied?
From other studies, not my PhD, but from other studies, we know that experiences of discrimination are very common, especially among those persons who have moved to Finland from the Middle East and African countries. We've seen this in our population studies, and there's also been reports such as the Being Black in the EU report, which clearly showed sort of the pervasiveness of discrimination and also how there are differences between population groups.
Yeah. Did you also sort of ask about like specific mental health issues when it comes to relation to discrimination, or didn't you ask like specifically about what sort of mental health issues are those people suffering from?
That's a good question. So in my own research, I've looked at symptoms of depression and anxiety and also like somatization, so physical symptoms that are like related to mental health. But from international research, we do know that experiences of discrimination can also cause physical symptoms. So, for example, higher blood pressure or like chronic physical symptoms. And what we also looked at, and I think it's important to note that even like the threat and fear of discrimination affects people's mental health and daily lives. So we know from various surveys that, for example, because of the fear of discrimination, people avoid certain public places or actually, yeah, make decisions in their daily life that are based on the fear of discrimination. And definitely that has a toll on mental health.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's such a harsh thing, and it is very, very difficult and unbelievable that how much one thing can cause. And, you know, let's not speak about all the other things that are happening in our lives. And this is just like one. And if you add all the other things, that is heavy. What can be done? What can we do as individuals, as a society, to fight discrimination in Finland?
So that's an excellent question. On the one hand, the primary authority is the non-discrimination ombudsman, the Yhdenvertaisuusvaltuutettu, which is the right authority to turn to if one has experienced or witnessed discrimination. But at the same time, I think it's a call for action to all of us. So as individuals, as workplaces and communities, to not only talk about these matters more, but also to be active when we see inequality and when we see discrimination. And I think also definitely earlier we talked about the role of the media and maybe what's wrong with the stories that are currently being portrayed. But I think that the media definitely also has power and potential to improve and like join the fight against discrimination in Finland.
I mean, it has to change. And unfortunately, discrimination has lasted for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. We have example of like USA, where it's been, you know, for a long time and not much has changed. And the recent Black Lives Matter movement shows it, that there has to be lots of change and it's about time for it to change. One last question to sort of wrap it up. What would you personally want to change in the, you know, Finland, in the system, in relation to mental health? What should change for it to be better?
That's a very good question. I would want to see change on very many different levels. So in the service system, that services are timely and sufficient, and that we're able to address the different barriers that we know that do exist and prevent people from receiving the care they need. Also, I would want to see change in the way that people, especially like are represented. So I believe in the importance of role models, both when we talk about and think about mental health and when we're talking about migration and sort of what are the paths that for example our youth see as achievable and available for themselves, and that definitely is linked to mental health and well-being. And yes, maybe those two would be what come to mind.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, hopefully soon you will see that all this is changing, and we will all see that this is changing. Is there anything else you would want to add to what we talked about? Something that we might have forgotten about, or do you think we sort of covered the topic somewhat from all around the sides?
I think this has been a really great discussion. Thanks for inviting me, and I hope that we're able to work on these topics. Keep working on these topics.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been very important to get also the side of research, because we usually share more personal stories. But when it comes to mental health and mental health awareness, it is really important to cover it from all of the sides. So we provide the most resources we really can for all the people that are really listening. So yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you very much to our guest, and thank you very much for you listeners, and have a nice day, and let's see you next week. Bye.